This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Daniel.
Well, hello. I feel like saying Happy New Year. Welcome to Pitch Talk.
New time, new start, new year-ish.
It does feel like Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah. Happy Christmas.
Happy return to Pitch Talk, everyone who's tuning in.
Yay.
And thank you for joining us at our new time of 4 till 5 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. We are super, super excited.
Very excited. I'm Rachel Downey. Olivia Cox, tell us what we've got coming up today.
We've got a really packed show today. We've got lots of guests coming in. We are kicking off with Steph Reid, 3-time Paralympic medalist. Then we've got the lovely Madeline Shaw in the studio, who's going to be talking all body positivity and healthy eating. And of course, she's a new mum. So if you want any tips on pregnancy, dieting, or not dieting, you know, nutrition, or springing back into pre-pregnancy shape, then do tune in. And of course, then we've got Tiffany Van Surst, who's going to be joining us later on. We're going to kick off with the headlines from sport around the world as it happened over the weekend. So in F1, of course, Vettel took the win at Melbourne Grand Prix after a timing error.
Yeah, yeah.
That cost Hamilton the position. Now, this is the fifth time that Hamilton has started on pole in Australia and not taken the win. So it's a bit of a gutting result for him. And it does look like, quite rightly, they feel a little bit miffed, given that they did by far have the fastest car. And actually, Sebastian Vettel kind of lucked his way into the win due to that virtual safety car period.
Yes, it's always down to either the safety car or virtual safety car, how you time it. Do you think Hamilton, this is going to make him feel maybe less confident, or do you think he'll just brush it off?
Honestly, I'm not convinced confidence is ever a problem for Hamilton.
Totally agreeing with you there.
I hope we're not going to start seeing another sort of a rerun of, I think it was a couple of years ago, Vettel really stormed the season. And what's nice and what keeps interesting about the F1 is when the cars are so different and different people are winning in different circuits. And I'm really hoping that it's going to stay like that, because otherwise you lose the interest.
It literally just becomes like the Mercedes championship.
Exactly. And I mean, it's a bit like Scare Electrics. You've just got a load of cars going round and round in the circle. Now, I know that is not the spirit whatsoever.
It's not.
I love the F1. Please don't hate me. But we need a bit of competition. Exactly. Moving on, in tennis, British number one Johanna Konta moved into the Miami Open fourth round with a dominant win over Elise Mertens. And next, she'll actually be facing Venus Williams. So the Williams sisters are well back on the scene.
Back with a vengeance, they really are. It's amazing.
Good luck to Johanna.
I think she's someone that we can... It's just exciting. Women's tennis at the moment. Who's out there? It's just brilliant.
Especially for the UK.
Very exciting.
We've got some really good talent coming through, and it should be a really exciting season. Really looking forward to Wimbledon, actually.
Yes.
That's coming up soon.
We should go.
Shall we?
Should we camp? No. Can't imagine me camping outside.
As you said that, Rachel Downey, my face fell, and then I realised she must be joking.
Yes. Wait a minute. I know Rachel. She will not be out there camping.
In athletics. Now, this is exciting. Her Majesty the Queen will be the official starter for 40,000 runners taking part in the 2018 London Marathon on the 22nd of April. Now, Her Majesty will actually be turning 92 the day before the marathon, and she will be starting the race from the grounds of Windsor Castle. So she won't be physically present at the marathon.
I mean, I would love her to be, as it's obviously her birthday the day before, to be slightly hungover, a bit delicate, you know, a little bit struggling with the sunglasses on. It's not going to happen.
She does have two birthdays, though.
Oh, she does,
so,
doesn't she?
You know, maybe she saves it for the second one.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. It's a good point.
It is exciting because it's only the third royal ever to start the marathon since it started. It's a really nice way of actually showing a little bit more support. The Queen doesn't often do this sort of thing.
No.
And I think it's quite a bit of an homage to how important sport is at the moment in our society. So,
yeah,
thanks,
I think it's
Mom.
A very good thing.
Yeah, it's a great
thanks,
thing.
Mom. Doff my cap.
Doff my headphones. In rugby, Rugby chiefs have announced an 8-point plan to make the game safer after their annual injury audit found a rise in the number of and severity of injuries in the English professional games. Now, they've got a couple of measures that they're going to try and work through. One is to work with World Rugby on reviewing the laws, with the current permissible height of the tackle under consideration. And we actually saw that quite a lot over the Six Nations. There were a couple of slightly dubious tackles and a couple of injuries where people actually had to be stretched off the pitch. So it's
a good
high
approach.
Time.
Yeah, this is good.
High
this is good.
Time. And they will also be further analysing.
We can analyse all day long. It's our show. We can analyse.
They're going to analyse training sessions, because an awful lot of injuries are actually taking place in training sessions, which really should be avoidable.
Yes, it really, really should. That's good. That's very good. Very positive.
Thanks. Not thanks to me.
Thanks to them.
I'm going to take that,
Olivia.
I'm going to take that praise. In football, going back to women, of course, very important year for women this year. The BBC will broadcast both of this season's Women's FA Cup semi-finals for the first time in the competition's 48-year history.
Yep.
Now, that is
such a good step
to me
forward.
That is huge. I mean, it always slightly angers me when you see women's sport and it's always referred to as women's basketball, women's football, women's
rugby.
Yeah,
what's wrong with basketball? What's wrong with... Because
exactly.
You don't say men's football.
Quite.
Yeah.
So I think this is hopefully a step in the right direction, and I think if we're going to make that distinction, this is the women's championship. Got to do it to the men. They can't have the standard one and we've got the secondary one.
Yeah, and do you know what? I'm really glad. I totally agree, and I'm really, really happy that the female women's football with women playing it. I don't know the right way now
it. Oh, I've actually screwed us over here.
Oh, no. I think it's so great that they're getting that TV viewing, TV airing.
Yeah, prime time.
I was speaking to someone about, I think it was like the cricket, women's cricket. It doesn't matter. Women's cricket. And they were saying, yeah, but there's not enough revenue, so it's not going to get televised as much. And it's like, yeah, but there's got to be that change where someone says, you know what, let's start. Because you're not going to get the big kind of viewing figures unless it is accessible for people at home watching it.
It's chicken and egg.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get the big brand sponsoring it if they've not got the primetime slot on TV. They're not going to get the primetime slot on TV until someone has to step forward, take a risk, and say, actually, this is the future, and we're going to do it.
Yeah.
We've touched on cricket a little bit. Finally, my final news story in my little roundup. Steve Smith has stepped down as captain of Indian Premier League side, the Royals, following the ball tampering controversy during Australia's third test defeat by South Africa. The 28-year-old has been banned for one test and fined his entire match fee by cricket's world governing body after admitting a plan to ball tamper. Now, this is huge.
Do you know what? This is what we're going to talk about. I love how they're either calling it like sandpaper gate. Do you think he should get a lifelong ban from the sport?
I do.
Do you?
I think this is hands down cheating.
It is. It's with cricket, it's been going on for years. And I kind of try to like look into it and understand exactly what, you know, because I know there's a whole spitting on a ball with your saliva to polish it that every player does. That is fine. That's legal. It's other things that happen in the past is that you can be chewing a sweet and that texture will change.
It's to do with the trajectory of the ball. So half of a cricket ball is textured and half is quite smooth. And if you change the balance of texture to smooth, it changes the way in which the ball
aerodynamics.
Fly.
Yeah.
So in just shining it, all you're doing, or sort of rubbing it, cleaning it, all you're doing is getting rid of anything that might be damaging that ratio. So actually, that's quite a positive thing.
Yeah.
Because the ball, right at the beginning of play, will be perfect. It will be the perfect ratio. But in manipulating that ratio, that's where it's, to me, complete cheating.
Yeah, and they knew what they were doing. And it says here as well that the ICC will not look at Ash's claim. World Cricket's governing body will not look into claims Australia players tampered with the ball. It's not... So the fact that the ICC are not reporting it says it all, to be totally honest. I think it's action needs to be made. Yes, he does need to be banned. I don't know if he... Because you've got to look at the team as well. So Smith basically said he overheard that this was going on and then they all discussed it. So it was premeditated.
Oh, yes.
And these young players shouldn't have got away with it. But what about the people above them?
And then there's been a huge now look into the leadership team. And it really does feel like it's come from up top. But it's almost the blatancy in the way that it was done. And it's it's sort of sticking two fingers up at the rules, and because they weren't even subtle.
No, this is what we're saying. I looked at the footage this morning. It's the ashes. It's like there's television cameras everywhere, and you see it happening. You see, you know, how obvious this bright yellow tape is being rubbed on the ball, and then the ball being rubbed on the trousers. And
it's
then,
crazy.
And it's just a complete lack of respect. But then you've got Michael Vaughan saying with the ashes, I think in 2014, he, again, this isn't backed, this is what he's just claiming, that he thinks that the Australians tampered with the ball then. I don't know how you prove it, maybe go back and look at footage, but again, you don't want the team to be used as scapegoats, but in Australia, this is
Oh, it's huge. I mean, this is such a blow to Australia. It's the positions in cricket are sort of second only to the political leaders in Australia, and it is a huge, huge sign of disrespect to the country and to the cricket fans that this has been allowed to happen. And I think there's going to be a massive backlash, and I think people are almost left feeling a bit bereft over this, because it's something that they really believe in, something they've got behind. They've sacrificed time and effort and money to watch the players, to support their team, and this is how they've been repaid. It's not okay.
It's not okay, Australia. And this is, I think, this is only the beginning of what we're about to see. I really do. We've also got the England-Italy game tonight at 8 p.m. Very excited. England are now 7 games unbeaten after a Friday's 1-0 win with Amsterdam. I think Gareth Southgate is doing a fantastic job, to be honest. Yes, we haven't scored loads of goals. Like, our games are like 1-0 maybe winning, but we are still producing those results and getting the best out of our players. Now, it's quite interesting. I want to ask your opinion on this. Raheem Sterling has urged England fans to give love and cut out the negativity. It's an ongoing joke, you know, with England. It's like, oh, we love them 1 minute, and then we absolutely hate them in the press. They are hounded. How important is it for a nation to get behind their team?
I mean, especially in the wake of seeing the impact of what Australian cricket have done to their fans and the backlash that they're now receiving, I'd say it's extremely important. I mean, sports psychology is so much more respected than it used to be. And when you watch players in their warm-up, and even as they get off the coach, they're all plugged into their headphones. They've all got, they might have spoken to their sports psychologist the day before. How they're feeling on the day really does impact. And as a nation, we're starting to realise that it's not just get out there, go faster, you're not good enough.
It's not how you
get the
best.
You've got to nurture people.
Yeah, I agree.
And if we're not nurturing our players, if we're not helping them in the way that the Australian fans were helping their players, how can we expect results? That was a bad analogy, because obviously I'm not hoping our players are now going to cheat.
We got yellow tape. No, but I agree, because we do. And, you know, the one thing, do you know, Arsene Wenger, manager of Arsenal, he on purpose bans all newspapers from the stadium. So in training, the players don't read any negativity. And that's actually obviously a very good thing, because no matter how tough you are, and the England team are young, you know, if they start reading all these negativities, all this negative write-ups about
terrible.
Them.
And it's a slippery slope. I mean, everyone knows that the Daily Mail comments at the bottom you just shouldn't read, but if something's written about you, it is difficult not to. And I have to say, your mood does affect your performance, because even if I go to the gym and I've had a row with my boyfriend, or a friend of mine isn't speaking to me, or my mum's annoyed at me, I can't help, my brain's not in it, my heart's not in it, and I can't help checking my phone repeatedly. So
you can't switch off,
imagine that on a global scale. We need to get behind our guys. We need to stop this negative press, because just because it sells, it doesn't mean it's going to help us in any way.
No, I completely agree. I really do. And very, very, very quickly, because I know I wanted to chat about fitness stories. The Anthony Joshua, Joseph, I couldn't speak then, Joseph Parker unification fight, which is on March the 31st. Anthony Joshua has spoken, and he believes that Joshua Parker will face an overwhelming experience in unification bout, and that it will go down in history this Saturday. He's also wants to be known as the smartest boxer, not the baddest. I like Anthony Joshua.
Oh, he's got a heart of gold.
Your face then, if we could see Olivia's face then, you melted. We saw the melt.
He's so lovely. I love all the stories that come through about him still living at home with his parents, or still super close to his mother. I think he's got his head on his shoulders, and he's a really good, hopefully, role model actually to a lot of young sportsmen coming through, because he really strives to be a well-rounded person, not just an icon.
Yeah, I know, I totally agree with you. It's and it's wonderful that how he's wants to use the sport for more than just winning. He really wants to leave his mark and have that longevity. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, well, not very quickly, fitness stories.
Yes, so later on we will be discussing with some of our lovely guests, should schools, now this is a tongue twister, I haven't realised, this is five
S's. She shall.
Thank goodness I don't have a list. Should schools sell sports supplements to pupils? So we're going to be asking whether it is right to encourage the use of muscle building supplements after some schools and some PE teachers have been, and there's a huge divide of opinion across that. A new study has revealed that doing just short bursts of exercise can be just as beneficial as longer workouts on your overall health. So we're going to be looking at current guidelines and what we actually should be doing. And then, of course, Meghan Markle, as she prepares for her royal wedding, we're going to be having a little look at her health and fitness regime and how she keeps a healthy lifestyle.
Well done. By the way, you said Meghan Markle then.
Did
fun. I was trying not to giggle.
I think I was too hung up on all my S's still.
Oh, that's amazing. We won't be invited to the wedding now.
Sorry, Megs.
I mean, you never know. Well, we've got our first phone guest of the new year. That's what it feels like.
Should we say Happy New Year, Steph?
Hello, Steph Reed. How are you today?
I am fantastic. How are you doing?
We're very good, thank you. Long jump world champion, 3 times Paralympic medalist, Steph Reed. Do you know what? I was reading up on you a little bit earlier, and it's incredible your career and the work you've done within being a Paralympian. And now you're moving on to acting. So first of all, let's talk about your career to date. And how important is it? Because it's got here as well the kind of the work, the speaking work, the work you're giving back. How important is it to give back to the industry that you've been in?
Well, I think, like, the reality is, you know, no one, it's impossible to excel as an athlete unless you've got an amazing network around you. And, you know, there's been so many people in my life that have, you know, given up time, given up sleep, grown grey hairs worrying about me. And I'm so aware of that. And, you know, it starts with your family, and then there's everyone else that, you know, your coaching network and those who support you. And so I think you just need to recognize this was not done on your own. And it's never, you know, you are invested in under the assumption you're then going to also return that investment and kind of then invest in someone else. And that's kind of how we grow. And so I think it's so important to just recognize that this was not, I've not been an island.
And your steely determination, it seems like you've always had that. Is that the case? Are you just one of those people that's always, you can always pull yourself out of maybe a darker place that perhaps you have been in the past?
I think I've always had, you know, a slightly driven / obsessive nature about me. And I think, I mean, it's never been necessarily about, you know, being the best at someone or winning gold medal. It's just simply that I don't see the point in doing something unless I am trying to be better than I was yesterday. And I genuinely think, you know, I've surprised myself in many cases at what I can achieve when I just kind of put my mind to it. And no matter how grim things look, you just keep going through. No matter how many times things go wrong, you just come back with a new plan. And I think that we all have an incredible capacity to learn and to grow, but we just kind of have to be willing to sit through those really uncomfortable moments/years.
Yes, moments/years is probably exactly the right way to say it, because of course you were involved in an accident around age 15, and that must have had a really lasting trauma on you, and it's not something that you really get over quickly. How, as a teenager, when you're already going through all the struggles of going through puberty, facing lots of life choices, how did you get through that?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, that's exactly, you're bang on. You know, it happened when I was 15, almost 16. And especially as a female, that is the age that, gosh, you just want to fit in and be normal. And, you know, the accident happened and I became an amputee. And I no longer looked, I'm making quote unquote signs in the air right now, but I no longer look normal. And in some ways, it was just one of the best things that could have happened, because, you know, once I kind of realized, I just kind of checked out of that. I just thought, you know what, I don't fit in, so I'm now free to do whatever I want. And actually, it was an amazing discovery at age 15, and it kind of set me up for the rest of my life just to realize, you know what, my goal is no longer to be normal. And, you know, there are more important things in life. You know, it was a really serious accident. And actually, it was one that, you know, there were definitely moments when I didn't think I was going to survive. And you kind of realize, you know, what's important. And that really stuck with me. And I changed as a person afterwards, for sure. And, you know, my goals changed and what mattered to me changed. And so in some ways, you know, it was an awful, awful thing to go through. It was so hard. But I am thankful for the experience.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you played rugby, didn't you, beforehand? And I guess you've always had that wanting to be the best within a sport. And you said that when you found running, it wasn't about being the fastest because you were just free again and you could just run as fast as you wanted to.
Exactly. I think I just, after the, I mean, I loved rugby, as you said, and it just wasn't possible for me after, and I just kind of accepted that sport wasn't going to be for me. But then I just, as you say, I got this, it was called a jogging blade, and so it wasn't quite like the blade that you see now in the media, but I got this blade, and I mean, it wasn't about being the fastest because I was not good to start off with, but it didn't matter. I just loved it so much, and I love the feeling of, you know, just not moving at a walking pace, actually being, as you say, just free to kind of run. And it was more the joy that stuck with me and helped me to keep going.
Well, that's so lovely. And of course, you have competed at the Paralympics. Do you find with the Paralympics, we've come a long way, I think, with amputees and disabled sports. Do you find that you're a bit pigeonholed, or that's what people sort of categorise you as, or have you found it quite easy to forge your own path in competing at the Paralympics?
I think one of the things, I think what definitely, we are very lucky in this country that, you know, we have some fantastic media that has covered the Paralympic Games. We have Parasport that is incredibly, you know, it's well-funded. And of course, I'm not going to pretend everything is perfect, but we are lucky and we have come a really long way. But I think probably, you know, the other side of that is just kind of remembering that, you know, there isn't just one way to succeed as a person with a disability. You know, you don't have to be an athlete. You know, it is, I think probably the real struggle or one of the tough things at the moment is that if a disabled person wants to do sport just recreationally, sometimes everyone thinks, well, no, you have to be a Paralympian. And yeah. I think it's good to kind of just, we need to shy away from that narrative and just remember that, you know, as I say, there's more than one way to succeed as a person with a disability. And I think it's also really good to acknowledge that so often, you know, what we're seeing on screen are, you know, people excelling in one very small area of their life. And we forget actually those other areas that are really difficult. And there are other challenges that are still really hard. And actually one of the things that, so I just did a short film called The Energy Within. And while it was about an athlete, I was really happy that those moments were included. It was a bit more of a realistic and honest look at what life does look like when you're experiencing what life is like with an acquired disability.
Yeah, so well, we both had a little watch of the film over the weekend, and I have to say it was incredibly inspiring. But as you just referenced, there are some real dark moments, and it provokes a lot of thought about what it must be like to suddenly go from not having a disability to having a disability, and to learning to cope with that, and almost learning to feel comfortable in your own skin again and do the things you want to do without the judgment of other people, who, of course, will. It's natural that someone will not treat you differently, but you are a different person, but that's not a bad thing. But something has changed. And I did wonder, some of the things that we saw your character going through as she was trying to compete against non-amputee athletes, was that ever something you experienced? A bit of almost competitiveness and wanting to prove that you could still do what you could do before?
I think there was definitely an element. So the way I would describe, some people have asked, you know, is this basically a biography of your life? And no, it's not. You know, it was never intended to be a factual representation, but it was definitely, in terms of the emotions and the emotional journey, there were a few elements of that. And I remember, you know, yeah, when I first became an amputee, in my head, I thought that the only way to kind of, you know, succeed at being an amputee was to basically fool everyone into thinking that I wasn't one, because I just hated yeah, people thinking I was different or you know, getting those comments or those looks or just the stares. And so I did spend a good deal of my time trying to prove, you know, I'm just as strong, I'm just as capable. And that was one of the best things about being involved in sport for me, was that was the time when I really started becoming comfortable and confident with who I was. And instead of, you know, always wearing trousers, you know, when I was no longer ashamed of, you know, my artificial leg. I now had this incredible running blade that I wanted to show off. And I was like, yeah, this is amazing. Like, you should stare at it because it's so cool. And so for me, it was a really powerful transition.
Yeah. And your character, Julie Bennett, my favorite bit was nearer the end when she walks back onto the track, confident, not caring, and kind of knowing who she is and, you know, confident in her own skin. Did you have that moment when you're like, this is me now, and I'm proud to be me?
Definitely. It wasn't so much of a moment for me. I mean, it was definitely, I would say it probably took about 4 years, 4 to 5 years after the accident until I just reached the point where, you know, I would wake up in the morning and the first thought on my mind was no longer, oh, I'm an amputee. And it was more of I didn't have that one kind of moment. But it was definitely a transition for me. But I remember initially after the accident and just kind of seeing, so part of my right leg was lost in a boating accident. And it's that first moment of just really seeing, you know, what's left and, you know, I guess what you look like now. And it's weird. It's strange because you think that's not me. Like, who is that? And it does take some time to adjust.
Yeah, really does.
Well, a hugely, hugely inspirational story. And honestly, thank you, Steph, so much for sharing. It must be quite cathartic, really, giving back a little bit and trying to help other people to understand. But I can imagine that it would take quite an emotional toll on you as well, perhaps digging back into some of those emotions.
You know, it's funny. That was one of the things that Sam, the director, he kind of warned me about in the offset. This was my debut acting. And he just said, I want you to be aware that it will be hard filming this because you're going to have to revisit some of the darker emotions. And I didn't really understand what he meant until I got into it. And it was really tough. And there were some filming days I would go home and I just felt like depressed and awful. But of course I did, because I just spent an entire morning acting like that. But the thing that I'm so proud of this film, because as you say, it shows a completely different side of disability. And it's something that, you know, everyone, you know, it's been released globally online for free. Everyone can go on and watch. It's on YouTube. It's on the Paralympic Facebook page, and it's on all the social media channels. And so we just really hope that people watch it and really think about it. And you don't have to have a disability to relate to it. I think, you know, a lot of us, everyone is kind of in a sense walking around, and there's something that we're hiding and don't want to share because we're afraid to ask for help. And I think it just kind of shows it's so much better when we just live life honestly.
Yeah, I think that's beautifully said. Very quickly, will we see you in any more films? Has this given you the acting bug?
You know, I hope so. I really loved it. And actually, I have auditioned. I did do another audition after the film. And I'm kind of happy to report that I was rejected. And so I definitely feel like a
Welcome
real actor
Welcome to the acting
now.
World, yes.
I know.
It's lovely. Well, Steph Reid, thank you so, so much for talking to us. The Energy Within, the film is now live. And we will we'll put out all the details on our Twitter. So thank you for taking the time out to talk to us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Steph.
Bye, Steph.
Bye.
So yes, you can catch the film facebook.com/Paralympics or twitter.com/Paralympics as well. How lovely. Very inspirational.
Such an inspirational story. And I've got to say, it does bring up a lot of questions about, as you say, as Steph said, everyone has something that they're hiding. And it raises a lot of really important points about mental health and actually allowing people the space to speak out and be non-judgmental and letting people ask for help. And it's something that sport, we are working towards in the sport and fitness industry, but we're not quite there.
No, I think the more you talk about it, it's about desensitizing it, isn't it? And the more,
make it less of a taboo.
Yes, exactly. Educate people more about it. Right, we're going to take a little breather. Coming up, we will have the fantastic Madeleine Shaw, nutritional therapist, best-selling cookery writer, qualified yoga instructor, new mum, literally everything.
One day I want to be. We are also going to play out the interview with... Yes. With Jazz Kaelin, I always pronounce that name wrong, Kaelin, sorry Jazz, who I caught up with the other day to talk about Olympics and Commonwealth and yogurt, interestingly enough.
Fantastic, here we go.
Hi guys, you're listening to FUBAR Radio and I'm joined today by Jazz Kaelin, double Olympic medal winner and the face of the new Swim with Jazz campaign by Yakult. Now Jazz, tell me a little bit about your swimming career.
Yeah, so, well, I learned to swim when I was five, but I've always felt really natural in the water. It's always something that I've loved doing. I used to go with my dad to the local pool every week, and yeah, from joining a local swimming club, just progressed really, and it's just been a dream come true. I never would have dreamt or thought that I would become Olympic medalist or anything really, so it is like such so surreal looking back, but it's been one amazing journey.
And you're now changing tack slightly, you're moving into open water. What's the difference in terms of swim training?
Yes, yeah, so it is quite different. Obviously the open water is a 10 kilometer swim and I'm used to doing between 400 and 800 meters in the pool, so it is quite a different in distance, but again, a lot of tactics. I'm used to swimming in a lane by myself, whereas in the open water you have everyone swimming around you, grabbing your legs and all sorts. So it takes a bit of getting used to, but I'm absolutely loving it so far.
So let's just rewind a bit to 2012 when you weren't able to compete. What were the psychological sort of ramifications of that?
Yeah, I think what was tough about missing out on 2012, it was the home Olympics. It was what everyone had been talking about, dreaming about for years. And I think to miss out on that was just so devastating. And I wasn't sure whether I wanted to still carry on with the sport, because I thought it is very tough and obviously quite draining when you don't get the results that you wish or hope for. So I think it took a lot for me to get back in the pool, but I'm so glad I did, and I wouldn't be sat here saying that I'm a double Olympic silver medalist if I hadn't have got back in. So it's yeah, it's been a crazy journey, but you take the lows with the highs really.
So let's talk a little bit about the campaign with Yakult. So you are promoting learning to swim with people who haven't learnt to swim.
Yeah, so it's actually been really incredible for me, because I've always been so passionate about getting more people to learn to swim, be confident in the water, but most of all to be like water safe and make sure that they know when they're going in the water that they're comfortable in the environment. And obviously the opportunity came up with Yakult to work on the project Swim with Jazz, where we've got four non-swimmers involved in this campaign, and it's been really difficult because there's hundreds of people applied and obviously everyone has a different story, and to whittle it down to just four people was very tough.
What do you think those real barriers are to learning to swim then?
Well, it's been difficult because obviously I've always been so confident in the water and it's kind of felt like a second home for me. Whereas I've seen it from a different side. My mum isn't actually so confident in the water, so I've always seen it from that side of things, where she's never had that opportunity to learn to swim. Mm-hmm. She was from a very small village in Wales and they didn't have access to a swimming pool. So I think the longer you leave it, the harder it is to actually get back in, and it seems a lot scarier when you haven't done it before.
In terms of fear though, surely there must be an element of fear for yourself, not only changing disciplines, but also open water, all the creepy crawlies in the water.
Yeah, I know. I'm actually not too bad with swimming in like the sea or the lake. I kind of tend to not think about what's underneath. I try and not picture it. But a lot of people are quite scared of it, but I don't mind it. But yeah, I was trying to kind of say to the guys today, I was saying like, I get so nervous before I race and you kind of have a bit of fear before you swim. And they were really nervous today. And it was just trying to make them feel at ease and make them feel relaxed, because I do get those feelings that they have. And it was just trying to make them feel like normal, that it is normal to feel nervous.
So we've spoken a bit about the Olympics. Of course, you have also won a Commonwealth title. And in fact, you're the first Welsh swimmer to win a Commonwealth title since Pat Beavan in 1974. What does that mean to you in terms of national pride, but also being a woman?
Yeah, for sure. I think racing in Glasgow in 2014 was such a special moment, and This coming up will be my fourth Commonwealth Games. Glasgow was my third Commonwealth Games, and to be stood on top of the podium and hearing the Welsh national anthem, and yeah, it was incredible. And even in the cool room, which is where we sit before we race, we were sat watching the TV, which is like what's going out on TV, and I saw like Prince Harry and William and Kate, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. And I obviously wanted to put on a good show for them, so it was nice to come away with gold when the royals are in the house.
Oh gosh, yeah, swimming for royalty, that's very exciting. So what is next? What's your goals for coming up towards Tokyo, I guess, 2020?
Yeah, I think for me, obviously, I'm still getting to know open water swimming. I've got a lot to learn. It's not just a case of getting to swim up and down. Obviously, you've got a lot of different things to get used to, whether it's the water temperature, whether it's in the lake or the sea, the currents. So you've got a lot to deal with. So I need to learn a lot about it. So the next couple of years is definitely going to be about getting to know the sport a bit more, getting more experience. And along the way, I want to be able to inspire more people to get back in the pool or to start swimming, because I think that's what it's all about, really, is getting more people more confident in the water.
That's fantastic, Olivia. That was your interview you did a little bit earlier on.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was with Jazz. I think it was a couple of years ago.
A
couple of weeks ago.
It
was when I was very jet-lagged from New Zealand. So, yeah.
That kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah. Thanks. Now joining us in the studio is the lovely Madeline Shaw.
Welcome to the studio, Madeline. And earlier on, I read out that you're a nutritional therapist, best-selling cookery writer, qualified yoga instructor. You're also an ambassador for Origins UK and a new mum. I mean, I'm exhausted just reading that. I don't know
and,
about you.
I think everyone's got hair envy since Madeline arrived in a feat of glory and then announced that that's her natural hair.
Yeah, we're a little kind of like, that's it, she's gone now. Yeah. No interview well, done.
We are going to be tweeting out pictures so everyone else can have hair envy.
Yeah, for sure.
But Madeline, the last time I saw you were pregnant, and now you have a 7-month-year-old son. That's just the most exciting thing. What have you found in terms of, obviously you're now having to cook for two or prepare meals for two. How has your body changed? How are you finding the transition through pregnancy, motherhood? What's your regime doing right now? Do you have a regime?
Yes,
can
us.
You? Is it just geared around him?
A lot of questions. Okay, so I think I found the first 6 weeks, like the hardest 6 weeks of my life.
Really?
Because you're so used to being in control of your life, where you like, you know, you wake up when you want to, you get changed, you eat what you want, and then that just goes out the window because you're completely controlled by this new human that's in your life. And you love them so much, and you look at them, you're like, oh, you're heaven. But you're also like, I don't know what you want. And I know people say that you get this mother's intuition, but that took me a really long time
to get. That's good to hear. It's good. It's reassuring.
So I would say now that he's 7 months, I'm like absolutely loving it. He's crawling. He's pulling himself up. He's got like 7 teeth. He's eating food. So it's so much more fun. Like, aww. I feel like we can go to the park together and have lots of fun.
So cute.
It is.
Is it a little bit trial and error, or is there some methods that you're following to raising your mini human?
I used this book at the very beginning called The Magic Sleep Fairy because I thought
I feel like I need that.
Because she was so great and I just really resonated with her book. I think there's lots of different methods, but I was really big on getting him into a routine at the beginning. And I know for some mums they don't like that. They think it should be more free-flowing, but I'm quite particular and I like to have like times when I eat and like when I go to sleep, and I wanted that sort of slight control, even though it was completely out of control in my life. And it took me a while to get him into a routine, but I did in the end. So that really helped me. I think saying yes to help, because I think at the beginning you think, oh, I can do it all by myself, but actually when a friend says to you, would you like me to babysit for an hour, say yes. Would you like me
don't
to
think
make
about
you,
it yes.
Yeah, a tea or whatever. I think saying yes to help is something that if I have another child, I'll be saying way more yeses.
How did you go from it says here like a simple food blog, but how did it happen? How did you start off on Instagram, like posting photos of food, healthy meals you were cooking? Like, how did it all happen? Because I know I've read that before, back in the day, you always on like say diets, you know, the calorie counting, the, you know, very lethargic. So how did you go from that to where you are today?
I guess it's been a long journey. I moved to Sydney when I was 18. I was meant to go to university in Newcastle and went to university in Australia. I went to
Quite
Sydney.
A difference.
I mean,
the difference.
So it was amazing. And when I was out there, I sadly developed really bad digestive problems. I was suffering with awful IBS. I was kind of trying to figure out what was causing it. And I went to see this naturopath and she was like, your diet is completely wrong. So she said, start eating healthy fats, start chewing your food, start putting plants as like the main component on your plate. And it just completely transformed my skin, my digestion, absolutely everything. It was unbelievable. And I was like, wow, I can't believe food can affect my mood, my skin, everything. And this was at the time where it was very much, like you said, low-fat yogurts and diet drinks and things like that, which, you know, were not agreeing with me, obviously. And I was eating so much at this cafe, they gave me a job and worked there. That's, that's how you get a job, guys.
Yeah, just eat.
And yeah, I worked there for a few years cooking and was just posting pictures of what I was making to Facebook, and this girlfriend of mine said, why don't you set up a food blog? And I was like, what's a food blog? She was like, oh, it's this thing where you post pictures of the food that you've been making. And
might
I was
not
like,
catch on.
Yeah. And and that was 5.5 years ago. And it was really like organic, and I kind of knew that I wanted to be in the world of wellness, and I knew I wanted to be doing something around food. So I started doing pop-up supper clubs, I started doing working with people one-on-one, like taking them to the shops and being like, these are the things that you should stock your cupboards with, and this is how you should like make a healthy plate of food. And it kind of just went from there. And then here I am today.
You've got your three pillars. It's move, munch, meditate.
Exactly.
Explain.
So I think that when you're trying to become healthier or get into wellness, I don't think it's just about eating vegetables and it's not just about smashing it in the gym. I think it has to come from this very holistic approach. So I have summarized them into three pillars: move, munch, meditate. So your movement is your daily exercise, and that can be Barry's boot camp, or it can be yoga or dancing in the street or whatever kind of thing.
Definitely sign me up for dancing in the street. That sounds fun.
And then there's the munch, which is kind of your nutrition, but also not just what you eat, how you eat. So eating slowly, taking time with your food, which is the thing that we all find.
I mean, I failed.
Yeah, because we're doing a million things an hour, but actually digestion starts in our mouth, so we need to like take time to chew our food, relax. And then the third pillar is meditate. So that's not necessarily sitting like on a kind of rock, like on the ocean or something, like umming away. It can be anything that kind of takes you out of your head. So it might be listening to the radio, like as you drive to work. It might be drawing. It might be walking in nature. It could be meditation. It could be yoga. It could be rock climbing. But I think that we spend so much time in our heads worrying, thinking, and we need to switch off, because stress is linked to so many things. And I think that if we don't figure out a way of kind of releasing stress and managing stress, then it's going to take over our lives.
There's a lot of people who quite strongly believe that the gut and emotional health are all very, very linked, and there's all these new trends for good mood food and high mood food cafes. What are your thoughts on sort of our gut health in emotions?
I mean, I guess it's where I started from. I think I started my blog because of my digestive problems and the way food affected it. So I think it is everything. Yeah, like you said, they say our gut's our second brain, and we know that from like we fancy someone and we get like butterflies. So we've kind of already knew that deep down, but we've not, I think we're just understanding how much the gut plays as a function to our immune system, to our digestion, how we're absorbing nutrients. So I think that I feel that's going to be a trend that's going to grow and grow. And fermented foods is really big, as, you know, creating more good bacteria in our guts. Mindful eating, I feel like, is becoming more of a trend. Like you said, good mood foods, kind of making our foods more digestible, like soaking our grains and our nuts and seeds and things like that, that can make it a little bit more digestible, or cooking our food. Sometimes eating a lot of raw food can be quite hard on our digestive system. So there are lots of different ways that we can make it easier for our bodies to digest, which means we'll absorb the foods better and then, you know, get more from it, which is great.
Yeah, it's interesting because you touched there on quite a few sort of diet plans that people have constantly brought up throughout the last couple of years: fermented foods, the raw food diet. And I guess what we've sort of taken from your book is that actually it's all about moderation and balance and finding what works for you.
Absolutely. I don't think that like one diet suits everyone. And I think that there are lots of trends coming out. But I think if, on the whole, if we all put like vegetables and plants as like the main component on our plates, and then if you want some chicken, have some. If you want to just be vegan and stick to like beans and lentils and things, have that as well. I don't think you have to, one's good and one's bad.
Yeah,
I don't think
it has to be. Yeah.
I don't think it has to be like that. I think that it's just, if we're making sure that we're eating nutrient-packed foods and that plants are at the base of each plate, that is the best thing that we can do. They're the most nutrient-dense, and then we can add bits on the side. And I think we have to be our own detectives as well. You know, if you eat hummus, which is delicious, but if it makes you bloated, probably it's not right for you. It might be that chickpeas make you bloated. It might be the tahini. I don't know. You have to kind of constantly be assessing things. It might be that you were stressed when you ate it. But I think that we shouldn't just look at someone and say, oh my God, they're eating this, I should eat that. You have to try it out. Keep cooking for yourself. I think the best skill that we can learn is to cook for ourselves, because at the end of the day, like, we need food for fuel. And if you can cook at home, it means that you can make these amazing meals, you can nutrient pack them, you're not constantly like ringing for like a takeaway every night. So yes, I hope that answered your question.
It did. And you've got your third book, A Year of Beautiful Eating. How did, have you always wanted to be an author? Is this, or how did that happen, first of all? So how did your first book come about?
I mean, I would have never ever dreamed of writing a book, let alone three. I had started my blog, and my manager, who's still my manager now, had approached me, and she said, where do you want to be in 5 years' time? Do you want to write a book? And I was like, that's what Jamie Oliver does. That's not what I do. And then she said, okay, but if you did, what would you write it about? And then my first book was called Get the Glow, because I wanted to kind of portray this idea that if you were healthy and you ate well, you would glow. Because I think it's a really beautiful word, because I didn't want to be like, get skinny or get ripped or all the other sort of messages that were coming out in the health market. I wanted it to be a word that kind of people would want to do, like, whoever they were and whatever their health goals were. And I think that glowing isn't just necessarily your skin, it's how you feel, it's your confidence, it's everything. So that was kind of the theme of it, and we pitched it, and a lot of people said no. They were like, we just don't think healthy eating is a big trend, we don't see it happening. And I was like, okay, fine, you know, obviously rejection is hard, but everyone gets rejected in their lives. And then my publishers, Orion, thought it was great, they loved it, and yeah, I've published three books with them, and it's really cool. Like, it's this kind of scary thing, because you're so much in control. They're like, what do you think you should do, and what recipes do you think you should do? And
you're like, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know.
Whatever will work.
But I guess I've been very lucky to be at the very beginning of this wellness trend that has infiltrated the UK, and hopefully will keep growing and growing. And yeah, it's so exciting. It's nice to have something tangible and something you can hold that you've created. And
it's amazing.
Yeah,
it is.
And the best thing, and it never gets old, is when someone says to you, I made your recipe and my whole family loved it. And I just like die every time I hear it.
Oh my God, that would be the absolute dream. So moving forward, obviously now being a mum, is there anything, say with books, you want to do something down that road? Probably yes.
Yes, definitely. I don't want to give it too much away, but I'm definitely thinking of something with a mum focus in mind. I think that there's a lot on like developing your baby and weaning your baby and your baby, but actually the mums need it too, you know. It's really tough, like your identity changes, you go from being Madeline to like the mum, your Shay's mum, and you know, that's hard. And then also your body changes and things sag a little more and are a bit more squishy and
oh sweet joy.
All these sorts of things. So you know you're changing so much as a person in a really magical way. Your heart fills with more love than you can ever imagine, but you know, lots of things are going on, and I think that mums need a hell of a lot of love. So that's my plan in my next book.
That's a very good plan. Well, look, Madeline, that's all we've got time for. But everyone can get your book, your third book, A Year of Beautiful Eating. It's out now. And you're also a contributing editor as well for Glamour Magazine online wellness and food section if they want to get more of your work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Madeline.
What a career.
I know. I feel like I need to go and put pen to paper now. I feel inspired. Yeah.
I
need
to just weep.
All that laugh or cry. Thank you, Madeline.
Thank you, Madeline. And don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this very short trailer.
FUBAR Radio presents.
Well, hello there. This is FUBAR Radio. I'm Harriet Rose. We've got a great show today. Very refreshing view on sex in a song, because a lot of people are a little bit more like, don't have sex with me because I love you.
That's not me.
But you're like, I want to have sex and I want you to never speak to me again.
Hello. You are listening to the News-ish radio show. I'm, of course, Sean Walsh, joined, as always, by Mark Simmons.
That's me.
What's up, motherfuckers?
What are you talking about? That is not you. What do you mean? I hope you know what Mark Simmons looks like. It does not... Mark Simmons looks... He's gangly, sort of lanky, right. goggle-eyed.
Yeah, goggle-eyed.
Ginger, awkward freak.
You're locked into FUBAR. It's myself, Sarah Love.
And myself, Miles Diggy.
Do you know what Buddha says?
What does he say? You say them worship some big belly fat man. What does Buddha say anyway?
He basically says, you can only lose what you cling to.
Ooh! That's deep, so just let it go.
Hello, it's Lizzie Candy and...
It's Stephen Lang, I'm not singing it.
Sorry.
Today I saw you were with
Angie Best, the first original wag. She looked incredible. And do you know she had a night with Elvis Presley? She said, my son looked like Elvis. And I said, how do you know? And she went, well, I had a night with him.
Really?
It's true,
I am Michael Payne.
I am Ruth Sanders.
And this is FUBAR Radio.
I came head to head with, I would describe her as a roadman. And you know you do that thing when you step to the right, then you step to the left, and then vice versa. You know when you make the other person laugh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Did the most serious cha-cha ever.
Yeah, ever. I had my headphones and he was probably doing that roadman laugh. with the mouth doesn't open.
Yeah, yeah, just...
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
Hi, I'm Gail Ems, Olympic silver medalist in badminton. Please listen to Pitch Talk every Friday, 5 o'clock on FUBAR. You'll love it.
Yes, you will, but it's Tuesday, 4 till 5. I was going to say 4 till 6 then. I was going to give us an extra hour.
Oh, God, that would
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
We'll be winging it.
Listen to us for another hour.
Literally be winging it. That was Madeline Shaw, absolutely lovely Madeline Shaw, that's inspired us
Girl
to
crush.
Write a book. I probably won't. Because I don't know what I'd write about.
I'll write a tweet.
That's enough, to be honest with you. Publish your tweet. Anyway, on the phone line right now, we've got our third and final fantastic guest. It's Tiffany Van Zust. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
We're very good. Thank you for joining us today. You're MMA, kickboxing and Muay Thai fighter. And also, I looked at this earlier on, you use poetry to inspire women. And it's... it's brilliant. Where do we start? Let's start, first of all, with your kickboxing. How long have you been a professional kickboxer for? How did it all start?
I've been a professional for going on 7 years now. I started martial arts when I was 8 years old with karate. And when I got to be about 15, I started learning Muay Thai and kickboxing. And... I competed for the first time at 18, and then as an amateur, and then I went professional at 22.
Wow. And, you know, you talk very openly about your anxiety. Is this something, because we talk about it a lot on here with mental health and anxiety, is this something that work, you know, that you've always had? You say you've got a lack of confidence.
It's definitely not a lack of confidence, especially not when it comes to fighting. It's more of a generalized, like a social anxiety. Mm. So when I'm fighting and when I'm doing things like this pertaining to, I guess, I feel weird calling it work, but it's my work.
Yeah.
I feel totally normal. I feel okay. But it's in like normal situations, like going to a party where I might not know anybody or not know that many people, or even just one-on-one interactions with strangers, if it catches me off guard, or I just feel very awkward in interactions, and it gives me anxiety, like knowing I have to go to a big group thing. And it's something that I've dealt with for like pretty much my whole life, but I didn't know what it was. I thought I was just like a shy kid and then a shy teen, And then I kind of started to grow out of it. But, you know, in today's day and age, like you guys were just mentioning, mental health is something that's more openly talked about, and there's more research about it. So with that all coming about, I was able to realize that what these feelings that I was feeling, and it has a name, and it was called social anxiety.
Does it make you feel, you know, because I wouldn't link someone like you, who's got the career they've got, and you're out there performing every time fantastically as a sports person. Does it annoy you that people are like, really? Of course you don't get anxiety, social anxiety. Of course you wouldn't. Does that ever frustrate you, or is that changing? Do you think people's perception is changing?
I think people's perception is definitely changing. Again, being open about it, you know, and maybe encouraging others to, hey, it, you know, just because you have a, you know, something like anxiety or depression or, you know, some type of mental health issue, it's, I think for so long it's always been, when you say mental health, it's stigmatized as negative.
Yeah, I agree.
Like you're insane or like you're crazy, but it's really nothing more than, like, you know, a chemical imbalance or you know, just triggers from other things, and it's not necessarily a negative thing, it's just another thing. Like you get a cold or a flu, right?
So, oh, true.
No big deal, it's okay. You know, it's like this. It's not like a cold or a flu, but hey, I have social anxiety, but does it make me a bad person? Does it, I mean, it affects me negatively sometimes, but it doesn't make me a bad person, you know?
I think it's incredibly brave that you've come out and you do talk about this, because, again, it's still something that we don't talk about enough. The spoken word poetry, how did this come about? Have you always done this?
I've always loved hip hop. I've always loved to write. And when I was younger, I would always keep a journal and a diary, and I'd, you know, I'd write rhymes and poems, and then, you know, here and there growing up. And then it wasn't until I went to an influencer summit in Austin, Texas at Onnit, and one of the keynote speakers was a spoken word poet and a lyricist by the name of NQ, and he performed and he spoke and he ran us through a workshop, and he was the inspiration. Like, seeing him do what he did and the way that he did it, and something just you know, sparked inside of me, and I was re-inspired to start writing again, but even take it a step further, because I've always liked to write, but I'd never performed. I've always watched spoken word poetry and like hip-hop battles and stuff, and been really into it, but I've never actually even tried it. And so I just watched him, and I watched all of his YouTube videos, and, you know, after I'd written something, I just gave it a go and filmed it, and yeah, that was that. And it just felt really, really good to do.
And do you know what? Sorry, we are annoyingly running out of time. I could talk to you about this all day long. I would recommend anyone to look at your videos, the poetry. It's just fantastic. It really is. And I think it hits a nerve with so many people. And it's very, very relatable, your spoken word poetry. Thank you for talking to us today. I really, really appreciate it, Tiffany. And good luck with everything. And keep on doing the poetry, because it is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Tiffany.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
And yeah, I do totally recommend everyone to go and have a look at the spoken word poetry. It's just fantastic. It really, really is. We are running out of time. We've got about 2 minutes. I want to talk fitness, but if we don't have enough time to cover everything, shall we carry over?
Shall we?
And spend a lot longer next week talking about it.
That sounds fair.
It's really interesting, the fitness stories that you brought in. And I, for the first time ever, I think I've got a few opinions on it, which is really exciting. Shock horror.
This is very diplomatic negotiating across the FUBAR radio desk.
Yes.
Next week's my week.
No, but they are fantastic stories that you brought in.
Well,
really,
we will continue to talk all things health and fitness. And just to update you, because I know you're at the edge of your seat wondering, and I know I'm now going to pronounce her name wrong again because I did it earlier, Meghan Markle.
I'm sure that's hoping
that's
answer.
Brilliant. It was much better before. Miracle.
She is essentially aligning her way of thinking to our beautiful guest, Madeline Shaw, and she's saying that it is all about balance. I don't just take care of myself for aesthetic reasons. I like to know that what I'm eating, how much rest I'm getting, and how much water I'm drinking is doing me good. My health, my state of mind, the feeling you have after a workout, all of these things drive me to step onto my mat or go to the gym. Now, doing a little bit of investigation, I'm assuming that by on my mat means that our friend Megan is a yogi or into Pilates.
Oh, you're good.
I cannot swear by that, but that is the kind of thing that we will be discussing in far more depth next week, so do tune in.
Yes.
To the second of our new times of FUBAR Radio's Pitch Talk Tuesday, 4 till 5.
It does feel like it's the second one of the year.
It's a fresh start. We're really enjoying it, and it's going to be a healthy, balanced way to start our second half of the year.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, look, Olivia, it's been brilliant. It's gone so fast.
I know, I can't believe it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Make sure you're here for Pitch Talk, as Olivia said, next Tuesday, 4 o'clock till 5 p.m. We'll see you then. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
Bye.
This past hour, you've been listening to Pitch Talk with Rachel Downey and Olivia Cotts. To listen again, simply go to foobarradio.com or our app, where this episode and all past episodes are free to stream or download. Send all questions, comments or queries to pitch@foobarradio.com or tweet @foobarradio.